think it's time to get to the interview time with Brent Baker, Executive Director of the Pondere Economic Partnership. Again, thanks for coming in. We want to hear all about it.
Well, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Okay, we want to get you a little closer to the mic, but I know it's perfect. So, what, you know, we want to hear about the summit that's coming up, but really this partnership, this organization, like you said, it's been around since 2000.
Yes.
So tell us about it, how it was formed, what it was formed for, its mission. And then the name is originally was something else, and now it's changed.
Yes. Originally, it was formed as the Bonner County Economic Development Corporation in the year 2000. And 13 of the biggest employers in the Sandpoint area got together and realized they really needed to start up an organization that would foster economic development, create more higher paying jobs, and with a particular focus on diversifying the economy, because it was largely, you know, focused traditionally. The economy here was built on logging, timber, mining, the railroad, and ranching, and that was about it. So when you started having economic downturns that would affect an industry, it would wipe out and really stress a huge percentage of the population every time there's a swing. And you'd see that, for example, if there is a big downturn in the price of framing lumber, all of a sudden a lot of people were out of work and barely getting by and so on. So they decided that the key was to create new jobs, diversify, and better paying jobs, and jobs with benefits were specifically mentioned. So it wasn't looking for, nowadays you think in terms of companies looking for cheap labor so they can, you know, compete and make it work. But this group was, I think, you know, quite enlightened in looking at, we want to develop a community is what we want to do. We want to create a sustainable and more resilient economy. And so they jumped in, and kudos to them. It worked. I mean, we really diversified between the year 2000 and now. The economy is much, much, much more diversified than it was.
What are some of the things that they brought in the beginning that kind of brought that stability to the community, not just in jobs for cheap labor, as you said, but really to support the population here, our neighbors?
Well, I wasn't around involved with them in the beginning. I was here, but busy being one of the businesses. But, you know, certainly the growth of you know, Coldwater Creek and the rise of Idaho Forest Group and its modernization and diversification that it did played a big role. The growth of Schweitzer over time. So tourism and recreation grew largely, and then we attracted quite a few small, light, clean manufacturing businesses, and they're centered around the little industrial parks we have around here and around the airports here in Priest River. And the idea was to get some, you know, quality year-round things that aren't so seasonal indoor manufacturing, but everybody was, you know, very concerned with the environment, so not looking for, you know, big heavy industry at any cost, just simply creating jobs, but ones that are clean, respect the environment, low impact, but also help preserve the character of where we live.
So that's an idea that you weren't there in the beginning, but that idea has remained to bring in clean industry, things that will sustain and stay around, small businesses. How do you did the in the beginning? How did they go out and find these, you know, jobs?
I think, well, originally there was a group that was promoting Sandpoint. There was Sandpoint Unlimited, and then that eventually, I think, folded in the mid to late 90s, and there was really nothing fulfilling that function at all. And so that's when they decided to create this organization, and they just put out the word that, now I'm trying to remember back, because this was, you know, somewhat, you know, early on in the days of the internet and so on. But right now, everything is very much, you know, internet and website focused, and having economic developers advertise and reach out, trying to recruit companies. And then Right now we work, I can speak more to exactly how they did it then. I don't have expertise, but I'm trying to build a history of the organization if I can. So I'll learn more and more about what they did back then. But now, it's interesting because, it has evolved quite a bit. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about how it's changing. And that is, when it was originally founded, it was fully supportive. It was a completely private nonprofit. We're a 501c6 economic development nonprofit organization. And when it was originally founded, 13 companies got together and each committed 8 years of commitment to fund the thing fully without needing any kind of other public support. So they weren't seeking to build a huge membership. They just took it upon themselves to say, it's important. We're going to pay for this. We're just going to do it. And so they stayed, you know, independent of government. It was a private industry, nonprofit organization, if you would. And that worked really, really well to get it started over time. And it was to serve in their original founding documents. They were founded to serve the quad, what they call the quad city, Sandpoint, Dover, Kootenai, and Ponderé. But over time, it changed and the support changed and the organization started taking grants from Idaho Department of Commerce. So now it started getting some public support. And then the city of Sandpoint started supporting it as well. And so it grew and its mission grew because when you take the commerce grant, you have to serve the entire county. It's a grant for rural economic development professionals, but you have to serve the rural county to get that grant. So now instead of serving four municipalities, we support nine, but we have nine municipalities in the county.
Clark Fork, Priest River,
Old Town, Ponderé, Kootenai, Sandpoint.
Sagal?
And no, Sagal's not incorporated, so I don't know who I missed there. But yeah, there's nine of us. Oh, Hope and East Hope. So each independently a municipality. So we serve all nine municipalities and the county itself, unincorporated areas of the county itself. When it was founded with a 1.5 FTE office, full-time equivalent employees office, and it grew to two FTE office, serving half, and then of those, so geographically, we serve double the area, and since the year 2000, we've just about doubled in size, too. So we're serving triple, in any case, you know, triple the population, if you will, but we're a one FTE right now coming out of the pandemic. That's why I took the position, was when I discovered they had been trying for 2.5 years to rehire a new executive director. I thought, well, this is an important function and I'm semi-retired. I can step in and do this now. So I did for a while. I can do that. And we want to grow it back up. It really should be to serve this county. Ideally, we should be at about 2.5 right now.
Staff.
Yeah,
right.
Staff.
Right.
And we're running on one. So we need to grow the support and grow the budget so we can, you know, really properly serve the function.
So you're governed by a board of directors.
Yes.
And they're probably a working board too. They have functions.
Yes.
That help the ideas that you're putting forth. So how does it all work? You say to serve these nine communities and the whole county. How do you do that?
Well, it takes, right now it's tough with just one, and we have two vacancies on the board that we're wanting to fill as well. But it takes some volunteerism, but it's a heavy lift for the executive director. Really, they're so, you know, we have 150 active nonprofits in the county right now. And that taps, that means, you know, the same limited pool of, you know, basically, you know, 100 to 200, 300 volunteers in the community tend to get out and be very volunteer oriented and do that work. And it gets hard because they're all, you know, doing really good, important work. And so you can't overload the board really with too much because they're also trying to take care of their families and enjoy our, you know, beautiful environment, and that's why we live here. So really, we need to have, you know, paid staff really doing the heavy lifting, especially for this kind of work. It requires that we really need to get to that 2.5.
So do you have businesses in the community that are sort of what you might call members of your organization that pay a fee become members?
Yeah, we have our membership is now that when the organization was created, membership was $8,000 a year with 8-year commitments. But now the highest level of membership is at $4,000 a year, and we have different levels going down to we have another membership level at $179 a year, or $45 quarterly, that we call friends and associates. So that's that anybody can join if you're a startup and really don't have good cash flow yet, but want to be involved and participate. You can afford that. And we have a lot of retired people who just think this is interesting and important work that we do, and they want to be part of it, and members, and they can come in at that super affordable level.
So is most of the $4,000 level businesses here in the community?
Yeah, it's all the 4,000 level. It's all businesses except for, I think, this year, Bonner County for the first time joined, and City of Sandpoint is also a member. But other than that, it's all the big members are some of the larger employers in the county.
So if I was a small business here and I joined your partnership, the Ponderé Economic Partnership, that's who we're talking about, what would be the benefit to becoming a member of the partnership?
Well, the benefit is that you have the opportunity to participate in making this, you know, community more sustainable and serve the environment. Like right now, what we're working on, the big thing we're working on is affordable housing for the workforce, because that's just everybody's stuck. So many of our members need employees, and they can't find them because the people do exist, but they can't afford to live here on the ordinary wages that are paid here. It's just what's happened in recent years has just pushed it completely out of reach. So our young people leave the area, and this is what we'll be tackling in the summit going over. So they tend to leave to areas where the pay is a little higher, but housing is much, much more affordable. Then they can have a better life. Who can blame them? You know, that makes sense. So we're trying to tackle the housing issue. Of course, workforce daycare has been and remains a really big issue. And talent pipeline and housing go hand in hand. And getting talent pipeline trained and then available to the local businesses is critical. So that's what we want to get happening, you know, most quickly right now. Nothing's going to move forward solidly without that.
So that's housing, child daycare, and you said pipeline?
Yeah, talent pipeline. So getting new people trained up to the jobs that people actually need. Or the jobs that employers have with the skills they need. What happens sometimes is they get trained up. We have apprenticeship programs, and we have programs that are, you know, provided by North Idaho College and the North Idaho Workforce Training Center and through the University of Idaho Coeur d'Alene Center. There's all kinds of great stuff going on, but a lot of times people get trained up, and then they leave and go work, take that skill and go work somewhere where housing is way more affordable.
So it's kind of a dominoes effect. You may have the talent, the workforce talent, but not any place to live, so they move on.
That's
even
right.
Spokane has probably the same kind of job opportunities, but better housing options.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So how would you go out and convince anyone the first thing to solve is the housing problem? It sounds like that's on the top of your list. I know Kinnexu Land Trust, also a KRFY underwriter here, is working on that. The city, all different organizations, the first thing you hear is housing.
Yeah, and there's about 8 or 9 different initiatives out there, everybody kind of working in their own, you know, niche on a part of the solution. And what I've hoped to do through our organization is keep bringing them together and coordinate those efforts and get everybody cooperating to better define the scope of what really solves the problem as opposed to pecking away at the problem. And, of course, that's going to be a big part of our summit. We have, Sandpoint, born and raised in Sandpoint, Bart Cochran, Tim Cochran's son, is going to be one of our keynote speakers. He founded Leap Housing down in Boise and is doing a pilot project up here with Bonner Community Housing Agency out in Priest River. We hope that's just the beginning of a lot of things. He'll talk about that at length. And then in our panel discussions, we have people from Kootenai Land Trust participating in the event as well.
We just had the Kootenai Land Trust, Kinnexu Land Trust, talking about this guy from Boise.
Yeah.
And so this is perfect. You're bringing people together. So let's move on. We're just a reminder to our listeners, we're here in the studio. This is the morning show. I'm Susie Prez, and I'm talking with Brent Baker. He's the executive director of the Pondere Economic Partnership, talking about the organization that used to be called the Bonner County Development Association. Sure. And Bonner County,
Economic Development Corporation.
Corporation, yes. Okay. And now it has become this after the pandemic. And let's now move on to your second annual What's Happening Up North Economic Summit, I think is what you're calling it.
Yeah, and it's not the second actually. Branded that, I think, back in the late teens, leading up to the pandemic. They created that when Andrew Marcaccio was the executive director at that time.
She owns Matchwood.
Matchwood Brewing, yes. Yeah. And, she got involved because when they moved here and looked to relocate and start their business here, they got a lot of help from, getting started from our organization, and was grateful and saw that they needed somebody to step in and take that role. And so she stepped up. But, now with the demands of the business, she's on the board now, but no longer executive director. But it was branded, I think, either before she did that. They had the summits going back a ways into the teens. But
is it always called What's Happening Up North?
I think that was part of the rebrand back in the teens. Right. It was already called that. They stopped. The last one was in 2019. And I started full-time in January of 2023, last year. So there was a three-year hiatus where they didn't have the event in 2021 or 22. And we started it up again in 23 with the same name previously. And it was a really great event. The type of people that come, who it serves, are the business leaders, so it's owners and managers of companies in the county and in the region, and then we have people from the education community. We have attendees typically from North Idaho College and from U of I and from the local school district, nonprofits, and the business community and government. We have mayors coming, council people, and so on.
This is a big deal. It's called What's Happening Up North, Rural and Thriving, Pillars of Community Development Economic Summit 2024. And I see why they're calling it the second one, because it's kind of now revitalized. It is happening on Wednesday, September 25th from 8 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. Nice spot to have it. So now let's dive into it a little bit more. Rural and Thriving, you said that this is going to be attended by all different kinds of people. You had a limit of 90 participants, and you still have openings. So let's go into what is going to be happening. We have an agenda here. There's a schedule. What will the day look like? And you can talk about your speakers and things like that.
Okay, sure. We're going to start out in the morning with a registration and a breakfast. So it's cost $79 to attend the event for the day, for the whole day, and includes breakfast and a sit-down lunch, so a light breakfast, a sit-down lunch, a happy hour at the end, and snacks and beverage service throughout the day.
Everybody likes the snacks and beverage service thing.
it's a full-on total experience. And then there's networking opportunities woven in throughout, but in terms of the formal presentations, So after the registration from 8 to 9, we get started around 9 a.m. With the presentations. There'll be some introductions and housekeeping, and then we'll move on to the first keynote speaker, which will be Bart Cochran from Leap Housing. That'll be a really, really important one for us. We're really excited to have him come join us. And then after that, there'll be a brief Q&A because there's going to be a panel discussion later, so we don't want to spend too much time on the Q&A. And we'll get to our second keynote speaker, which is Dr. Nick Swain, president of North Idaho College, that plays such a vital role. And as we know, if we've been following the news, there's been some real challenges with the college district down there. But it's really, really important to us up here. We very, very much support them. And personally, I think, you know, Nick has been really heroic in his efforts to make things keep moving forward. So we're really delighted to have him here as well. And then after his brief Q&A, we're going to move on to a panel where we're going to be talking about the twin pillars of community development that we need to strengthen, which are going to be simultaneously housing and the workforce training and talent pipeline issues. How do we pull that all together? They're all tied together in how we strengthen and develop our community going forward. You know, I might mention that part of the theme has to do with looking at how we as a community newly define what is economic development, and really economic development and community development are spoken of together nowadays. In the old days, it was just all about industrial expansion and creating new jobs, period. But many communities have seen that doesn't always lead to a quality of life in a community that ends up being exactly what people are really wanting. So there's a new focus on defining who are we as a community, what do we really want. Let's shape the future toward what it is we really want, who we really are.
It's very diverse, that subject that you're talking about, because for a worker, for a family, for someone coming to this community or staying in the community after college, coming back, it's really a sense of home. And home so often has to do with where you actually live. You may have a connection to your work, but home and family is just as important. And if you don't have that sense, this is my home. This is a physical house even, or a really nice community developed apartment complex, something like that. So that is a vital part of the vitality of a community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So then we're going to move on from, then we'll have a panel discussion. We have about a 5-person panel that will then discuss the issues that were brought forth by the two morning keynote speakers and talk about what does that mean for us? How do we implement things in our community in a way that serves us appropriately based on what we've heard this morning? And then we'll go on to a lunch, an hour and 15 minute of networking and a sit down lunch that'll be provided by Matchwood this year. And after that, we have our afternoon keynote speaker, Dr. Jaap Vos. He's from the Graduate School, University of Idaho, and he's a natural resources and community development specialist. And I saw him present at the last year. I attended the Northwest Community Development Institute, and he was my favorite speaker at that event. And then I found out he actually will go around and speak to communities as well. I thought, oh, perfect, exactly what we need. So he's a really good speaker. He's originally from the Netherlands, so he's experienced. So his undergraduate through college, and he's born in a rural community in Holland. And he has that European perspective and experience well, but then brings it here and ties it to our natural resources and our way of life. And he's really interested in looking at how rural communities thrive. And that's something I think, you know, most people here do not want to make this into a Coeur d'Alene or a Spokane or a California or anything else. We have our own identity here, and it is definitely, you know, a rural, a wild open space, wildlife, natural beauty focused lifestyle that we have up here, and nobody wants to trade that away that I know. So we have to look at how do we thrive, how do we develop, how do we evolve, who's coming in, who's going out, how is our population changing, and how do we, one of the things I love Dr. Vos looks at is how do we make sure we're not relating to undeveloped spaces as just things waiting to be developed later, but how do we actually preserve our agricultural lands and our wild and open spaces and integrate that into economic and community development that defines who we are and what we really want.
So what kind of thought process goes into looking at these spaces, the thoughts, the future, to kind of hold that? Is it community, like the city of Sandpoint, the county, their codes, their restrictions? How do you all work together? You may have ideas of how it should be, but keeping it that way or helping it evolve in a good way, how does that be held? Who holds that?
Well, interestingly, one of our sponsors this year, again, as last year, is Anovia Foundation. I might tie in. It's part of my job is tying things together in the community, different organizations, different initiatives, and different communities, different governmental bodies, so that we can all communicate and work together. And there's been a recent initiative that the Anovia Foundation started recently called Community Heart and Soul, working with the Orton Family Foundation out of Vermont. And the Community Heart and Soul program is really, really interesting. So there's a few of us here in the county who trained to be coaches, including myself, for this initiative. And the way Community Heart and Soul works is they go out, so they're providing grants. I think there's 7 grants this year from Anovia to communities, and there are 20 inland northwest counties, and to have communities go through this process where you define who you are, what do we love about our community, who really lives here, like look for everybody. And then how do we make statements and define who we are and where we want to go and what we care about? And it's about it, too. It takes, if you do it really fast and efficiently, it's about an 18-month process. Otherwise, typically on average, it'll go for 2 years to get it done. But then when you come out of the thing, you've pulled together the different communities. And traditionally, the way the whole thing got started was traditionally, planning and zoning commissions doing comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances drive the future growth, and they post their meetings. But people, I don't know if you've ever been to like a 5-hour planning and zoning commission meeting, but once you've done one, you probably never want to go to one again, but it's important work they're doing. But it doesn't really engage the community in the same way. Like one thing they do in Heart and Soul that I loved was and do love, and we'll be working with them going forward, is they always ask, who have we not heard from yet? Who should be at the table that is not? So they go out and make sure all voices are heard, make sure they get the elderly and the young and veterans and people of, it's completely apolitical. It's like rural people, town people, old people, young people, veterans, different public service groups, who's here, and they create community network maps and make sure they're hearing all voices to make sure they really define. When we say who we are, it's not us against them or anything else. It's all of us.
It helps to inform decision-making on things like comprehensive planning. So who in this area is holding the heart and soul? I love the name because that is the truth. Who's holding that and kind of facilitating that survey?
Well, none of the Bonner County communities applied for this round. There's a readiness survey to do it. A community has to be recognizing that they want to do something like this and have already gotten some commitment organized and together within that community. It's designed, the program and the grants provided to pay for the coaching. So the Anovia and Orton Family Foundation together trained us and are providing the coaching to the communities. And there are some expenses involved, but it's mostly you got to do the work and you got to be ready and wanting to do the work. And so I don't think any communities in Bonner County applied in this round, but I hope to get word out about what it's about and why it's valuable and how it can be so good so that we get some Bonner County communities applying in the next round.
So when you say communities, are you talking about the governing community, the governing bodies in the community? That would be the commissioners or the city of Sandpoint or smaller cities.
You need some involvement from the municipality. So they serve. So the program is designed for communities. They don't have to be incorporated. So say if Sagal, as an unincorporated area, had a Sagal community center and leaders and people involved, and they wanted to do it as Sagal, they could do it as Sagal, even though they're unincorporated. Mm-hmm. They are a separate community. They're not Sandpoint. They're a little bit different. But otherwise, it's for communities under 30,000 in population. So if you go over 30, I think they think it gets too big and it's too hard to do the process. But some of the communities that were awarded grants, this year have populations of approximately the ones in eastern Washington now, and the Palouse populations of like 400. So, small towns, but certainly Sandpoint at approximately 10,000 is well within the size limit below the 30,000. And being the biggest, that means all 9 municipalities in the county would be eligible, to do it. And you can do it. Sometimes 2 communities that are close together, if you had, for example, not saying they would want to, but if they did, like Kootenai-Ponderay being immediately adjacent in 2 small communities, but they have a distinct identity different than Sandpoint, but if they wanted to do it together, they could jointly apply. But otherwise, so, Dover could apply. Priest River would really benefit from this and so on. So we'll be getting the word out over the course of the next
year. So you're getting the word out, because I was going to say, how do people hear about this? Well, even if there was a group, like you said, a rural Sagal group, a Bottle Bay or whatever, mm-hmm. a group of 400 people or whatever is out there, how would they hear about this? Because it's the first time I've heard about it.
Yeah,
it's very exciting.
We'll be mentioning, I'll be talking about it briefly at the summit.
Okay.
We'll be talking about it there, and there'll be people involved with this effort there at the summit, and information about it will be available at the summit. And I'll be getting around to city council meetings and to county commissioner meetings, and we'll be getting the word out about what it is and why it's so valuable. But, that's just an option to get, rather than have what we've seen before is, so people don't love going to planning and zoning meetings, and it's often driven by professionals who speak, planning and zoning speak, they're highly trained, highly specialized, and the industry pushes things in a certain way, but they're not really asking the questions. They're not really making sure they've reached out to everybody.
And really listening.
And say, what do the people really want, and have we heard from everybody? They're not doing that. They don't have time to do that. They have a meeting and they have a process and they got to get it done, and they don't have 2 years to come up with that answer, so they don't. With Community Heart and Soul, what they do is they develop then as a community the statements, and then they formally adopt. So the city council, if it's a city, if it's a municipality doing it, adopts this, and all the community organizations come together and they formally adopt the statement and pass a resolution, and then they give that to planning and zoning and say, make sure everything you do addresses and moves this forward, because this is who we are, yeah. And this is what we love about our community.
It's a facilitating,
and this is where we want to go.
Facilitating tool. Just want the KRFY listeners to know this is 88.5 KRFY. I'm here in the studio talking with Brent Baker. He's the executive director of the Ponderay Economic Partnership. And we're talking about that organization. I'm learning a lot. You can hear this whole interview at krfy.org later in the day as a podcast. And also we're hearing about the upcoming What's Happening Up North, Rural and Thriving Pillars of Community Development Economic Summit that's coming up next Wednesday on September 25th. Tell us how someone would get involved. Who should get involved?
Well, anybody who's interested in helping shape the future of our community and solving the problems that we have right now here should definitely get involved. But like I say, typically we have people from nonprofits, from government, from business, and also people who are looking to maybe be entrepreneurs someday and People who are retired often will come and bring their expertise and want to volunteer and help and get on top of what's going on. So it's really a community leadership summit where people who are going to shape our future come together to learn some new things and put our heads together to figure out how do we come together to better shape that future we really want.
So board members of organizations that are intricately involved in that, city council members, mayors,
business owners, business managers, owners. All kinds of people.
Okay.
Yep. So you for still, anybody.
And there's still openings.
Yeah, there's still openings. I think we can still sell 40 more tickets. So, and we have a little less. Oh, we have exactly a week to go. So don't wait too long. There you go. We sell, you know, several a day. And so I would say buy your tickets sooner than later.
So you can register at a website called PEPIDAHO.
Yeah.
.org.
Yep. PEPIDAHO.org. PEPIDAHO.org.
Better way of saying it than spelling it out. Good. Thank you. And great website also there that describes the summit and what and who and where. You have great keynote speakers too. You just described most of them. Again, that's Bart Cochran, Dr. Nick Swain, and Dr. Jop Vos.
Yeah.
Jop Vos from, yeah. You know, and you're right.
Jop.
Jop.
Yeah.
You're right. Over in the Netherlands, they have specifically, they have limited space. And so when they're developing whatever they can for the future, they have to be very cognizant and very conscious of what they do and don't do. Mm-hmm. Because it matters to the sense of a thriving community. And community is people, not just space and infrastructure.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting, you know, since you mentioned that, is, you know, we can all learn from each other and what our experiences are. What's interesting to me is there are experiments that have been successfully run for hundreds of years on protecting agricultural lands. And it's interesting to me. What always shocked me was, for example, if you look down in California in the San Jose area, in the Santa Clara Valley, my cousins moved there when we were little kids. They moved there, and they lived out in the country near what's probably now Sunnyvale or Cupertino, somewhere in there. And it was out in the country, and they had on three sides, they had fruit orchards on two sides and a horse ranch directly in behind. And it was literally out in the country, just in my own lifetime. And now, if you go there, I went to see my aunt about, I don't know, 6-7 years ago, and there was nothing like that for as far as the eye could see. In every direction, there was nothing. It was fully, completely urbanized. The richest, like the apricot orchards that were there were phenomenal. It's the richest fruit-growing region in the world, and it's all been paved over. It's all asphalt and concrete now, and that's just, it is, that land should never have been used for that, in my opinion. It should have been maintained agricultural, but we have certain philosophies about private property and the freedom to use that as you will, but other cultures don't do that. In Canada, they have agricultural land reserves. In France, they have it. In Italy, they have it. Everywhere in Western Europe has it, where they say, we need to be able to feed our people 10,000 years from now. So they identify their prime agricultural lands and say, you can only do very, very limited, you know, split for family. If they're working the ranch and the family continues and is splitting and growing, you can build another house for family that's there working the farm, but you can't do what San Jose did to prime agricultural lands in a lot of countries. And I think we need to look at things like that.
So we're ahead of that. We can look at things like that. What would you say are the biggest assets that we have here in our community that we want to make sure that we are aware of and consider when making decisions about economic growth?
Well, you know, I think that we have to protect our natural resources. I mean, really, almost everybody I know that lives here. They didn't come here because we have the highest paying wages or the greatest amount of economic opportunity. We want opportunity, but that's not why we're here. Everybody I know came here because they love the mountains, they love the lake, they love the skiing, they love the wildlife, they love the recreation and the turn of the seasons. And it's just a beautiful, amazing place. And we have to make sure that we, and that's what the theme of this is how do we do community and economic development without sacrificing what we really care about, which is this amazing place. So how do we protect our environment, protect our wild and open spaces, protect our agricultural lands, and preserve the rural characteristic of our county? Because I don't know anybody. I mean, I sure they exist and they have the right to think so, but I don't personally know anybody that would like to see Bonner County urbanized.
I think you're right there. And so we have opportunity to make sure that things are done well, mm-hmm. with foresight and thought behind who are we, mm-hmm. and what do we envision. It's a little bit of envisioning ahead of time, and then helping that can inform decision making at the governing level.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's one thing I learned from going through that community heart and soul training. As well as it's really important to reach out and recognize there's not going to be one answer. It's not like we're one, you know, certainly if you've attended, Bonner County Commissioner meetings in the past a couple of years or so, year or more, you're going to realize we're not one community. It's not like we're united in one community, but that's okay. The important thing is to recognize we're a collection, like as a county, that's a big area. We're a collection of communities and we don't all want the same thing. And so when we make these statements, when we understand who we are and what we want, we have to give space for different communities of different people who want different things. And then there's no reason why we can't accommodate all of it. I don't believe it's, but you have to define it first. You have to assess it and define it and come together and then protect that and make sure everybody has that opportunity going forward.
Well, yeah. One of the things I really liked hearing today was the Inovia Foundation's Heart and Soul Project. I'll call it a project, but opportunity. And I think it would be really great after your summit to get you and someone from Inovia Foundation and the Orton Foundation, mm-hmm. Fund to come in and talk about that specifically.
Yeah, I think we can make that happen.
Yeah, sure. Because I think it's part of this picture. It's part of understanding who we are, is to have that heart and soul clear. Mm-hmm. And the only way you do that is by listening, as you said, and talking to each other. And so there's opportunities out there. It's just making the connections. It sounds like that's what the Pondere Economic Partnership does. Partnership is a good word. You make the connections and hold the intention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And that's the community. It's interesting now, because there is some traditional economic development work we do as well. We initiated, since I started this, we initiated an entrepreneurship workshop and a leadership workshop. And I've worked with about 40 different companies directly helping them, mm-hmm. solve problems, figure out some things, move forward. So we work individually with companies, with industries, with up and coming entrepreneurs. We're trying to, rather than traditional business attraction, a zero sum game where you have somebody leave another community somewhere else and move their business here, we're not interested in that. We already have a housing problem. Where are you going to put these people?
Right.
It's going to have a negative effect on our housing situation. But it's also going to, if a company comes in and says, yes, when I need 80 employees, well, now what are you going to do? Because our existing businesses that are our members here already are struggling to find enough qualified workers for their businesses. So it doesn't help to do traditional business attraction. So we need to identify, with the very limited amount of business attraction work we do, we're doing a survey right now, designing a survey and getting ready to launch, finding out what do our business community and our citizens wish was here that we don't have, and we're going to limit our business attraction to those things that would complement and supplement who we are and what we are. Otherwise, we're working on homegrown entrepreneurship and the existing businesses that are here and growing them.
Okay. That's clear. It's like putting a puzzle together, making it work and thrive in our community. So thank you, Brett Baker, for coming in and telling us about the Pondere Economic Partnership and your upcoming What's Happening Up North Economic Summit that's coming up next week. Anyone interested can go to pepidaho.org and register, and or contact Brent Baker. I'm going to throw out a phone number, 208-290-7752.
Correct. Okay.
Anytime. Thank you so much for coming in. This is a vital work that you're doing. I can see why you need more than 1.0 staff. It's a big project, and it's not just a project. It's a support of our community, nonprofit work that you're doing. So good job. Have a great what's happening up north summit, economic summit. And thanks for coming in, Brent.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I'm serious about Innovia and the Heart and Soul. Is it called Heart and Soul?
Yeah, from the Orton Family Foundation Community Heart and Soul Program. They're back east out of Vermont, but they travel around a lot.
And we could
get them out. I'm sure they would be happy to come out here. We'll get them. And Innovia, of course, is always present in our community. So.
And we can do phone interviews.
Mm-hmm.
So it's all possible. It would be good to hear about that.